625, Zion's Call. I'd like to thank Brother Gary for his lesson this morning, and thanking for him for giving me the idea for my lesson this morning. I talked to Gary earlier this week, and he let me know what he was speaking on, and gave me an idea of what to go along with it. I know that our lessons don't have to go along with each other, but I think it worked out great for this morning's lesson. And thanks for everyone for sticking around for this lesson. I'm always glad to see the campers come, and I know it works out great for them to come for our first service and then head out. So today, as Gary mentioned, we're going to be actually looking in Matthew 4, 1-11. That's going to be the basis of our lesson today. And in this lesson, we're going to talk about how Jesus was tempted. And he was tempted by Satan in the wilderness, and we're going to get into each of these elements of how he was tempted this morning. So let's take a look at the outline. Today we're going to be talking about the baptism of Jesus, because that's really where the story starts. And we're going to be talking about Jesus, who he was, and Satan, who he was, and how Satan tempts Jesus, and how Satan tempts us. And we're going to also look at how to stand against Satan, how to avoid sin, and then we'll wrap it up with a closing here. So, to start off with the thoughts of our lesson today, I'd like to take a look at the baptism of Jesus, because this is what prefaces him going into the wilderness. So, as we see here in Matthew 3, this is 13-17, it talks about Jesus' baptism. And it says, "Then Jesus came from Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. And John tried to prevent him, saying, 'I need to be baptized by you, and are you coming to me?' But Jesus answered and said to him, 'Permit it to be so now, for thus is it fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness.' And then he allowed him. Then he had baptized Jesus, he came up immediately from the water, and behold, the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting upon him. And suddenly a voice came from heaven saying, 'This is my beloved Son, for whom I am well pleased.'" So this kind of prefaces chapter 4, that's actually where he goes into the wilderness. So just kind of looking at this area where he was baptized. And I had a shot of where they believe that this is the area that Jesus was baptized at. And the reason that I know that this is the area he was baptized at is because I found it on the internet. Because now we know that we have to believe it because I found it on the internet. And what I thought was interesting about it is they actually have letters of authenticity stating that that is where he was baptized. And you can like it on Facebook too, just in case you need to. But that's what I was thinking of, kind of building with our lesson here. We see that he was baptized, and then right into Matthew 4 and 1, it says, "Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil." It's interesting to think, right after he was baptized, he was led into the wilderness to be tempted. I mean, right after he was baptized. So I was kind of thinking of that with our own selves and lives, you know, right after we become a Christian, you know, that temptation is still there, and Jesus was even led right in the wilderness to be tempted directly by the devil. And in my notes, I even underlined the devil, because it always seems like, you know, if we're tempted, we're tempted by an avenue of the devil. You know, Jesus was tempted directly by the devil. So that's just a thought that I have always had, you know. That's, you know, we think of the temptations that we may have and think of how he was tempted directly by Satan. So let's take a look at who Jesus was. So we know that Jesus was born of a virgin in Bethlehem. That's in Matthew chapter 2. And also that he was the Son of God. And just a supporting chapter there in John chapter 3. And also, I've always thought this verse was interesting, that he didn't stand out in the crowd. That's from Isaiah the prophet in chapter 53, talking about the appearance of Jesus. Also, he was from the lineage of Abraham, and that's from Matthew chapter 1. Almost that entire chapter is the lineage of Christ. And in Mark chapter 6, we read about that his, I was going to say his father was a carpenter, but we know that he lived in the household of a carpenter, and that he probably filled that position. In Mark chapter 6, it talks about the years of his life there. And also, he had no worldly possessions, and that's in Matthew chapter 8. And he had all the same emotions that we had, and that's where Gary's lesson fits so well with this one. Because in Gary's lesson, he talked about his emotions and about how Jesus was born, you know, in the flesh. And I have some supporting verses here. In Hebrews 2 and 9, it says, "But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, might taste death for everyone." So we know that he was made lesser than the angels to be here on earth to face death. And also in 1 John 4 and 2, it says, "By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God." So we know that he came here in the flesh. Okay, so that kind of sets our stage here of Jesus. We all know who Jesus is, but that's just some sporting facts about him. So let's take a look at Satan. Just kind of a brief synopsis of the word Satan. The original Hebrew term Satan is a noun from a verb meaning primarily to obstruct or oppose, and that's found in Numbers 22:22, 1 Samuel 29:4, and Psalms 109 and verse 6. And the reason that I mention this, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's recently left the faith that he was in, and he was telling me why he left, and he said that, he looked at me and he said, "You know, Satan was never really a real person. It was a band of ninjas that ran around causing havoc." And I was like, wow. So that's why I just wanted to mention this real quick about the original term of the word. About, because if anybody's ever approached by anybody stating about who or what they thought Satan was, just look at the original Hebrew and the original terms. So, real quick here, I just have some verses just to call to mind. We read about him being in the garden, tempting Eve, that's in Genesis chapter 2. He was cast out of heaven, and that's in Revelation chapter 12. It talks about the wars of heaven. And Satan and Job, that's yet again very interesting chapters to read when you're trying to set the stage about Satan. And these could be entire lessons themselves, so that's why I just kind of gave the chapters there. And then our lesson today is tempting Jesus. So we're going to go ahead and jump into these verses that we're setting the stage about. So here in Matthew 4, 2 through 3, we already stated Matthew 1 is where he goes into the, Matthew 4 verse 1 is where he goes led into the wilderness. So let's look at this first way that he's tempted. And it says, "And he had fasted 40 days and nights. Afterwards he was hungry." I would imagine 40 days and 40 nights without food, I would imagine you to be pretty hungry. And also, last night, I read a lot about the idea of fasting and how long other people had went for fasting. A lot of people may remember Mahatma Gandhi. He fasted for a long time during the time that they were trying to get India's freedom, and he fasted for 27 days. Also, it's, I guess, a world record. David Blaine did it for 44 days. So this is something that is humanly possible. That's why I just wanted to mention this in this area, that it is humanly possible to fast that long. There was also a Buddhist monk that said that he went for about 60 days. So it is humanly possible. So you could imagine how hungry he was at that time. Then in verse 7 it says, "Now when the tempter had come to them, he said, 'If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become bread.'" You know, so we think of that temptation of how hungry he was. That Satan's asking him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become bread." So let's kind of look and see how he could tempt us. So let's throw some of these up here. So he urges us to put ourselves first. You know, it'd be putting ourselves first over what's right. So Jesus definitely could turn those stones into bread if he wanted to. But is he doing what's right? Would he be doing what's right? He was tempted from the devil to prove himself for who he was. You know, and it places that doubt, you know. Could he do that? You know, is he the Son of God? That's, to me, that's what the whole question of what the devil was asking. And also it urges us to fall into fleshly desires. Now, you know, of course, we're talking about us here in this area. So, and I have such as drugs, alcohol, overeating. You know, these are things that are fleshly desires of ourselves. You know, I think of prescription drugs. Is it wrong to use prescription drugs? No. Is it wrong to abuse prescription drugs? Yes. You know, it's those areas that we have. In overeating, something that I struggle with. There's those urges of things that we have to think about. So then with these ideas, let's look at ways that we can stand against this particular one. So God, we're supposed to put God first and then others instead of putting ourselves first. And then we have a supporting verse here in Matthew 22 and 37. It says, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." So we're knowing to put him first instead of ourselves first. Also, to not doubt in the Lord. And we get that from Proverbs 3, 5-8. And it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil, and it will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones." So we can think of these verses of how we can stand against Satan. We know that Jesus was tempted in a certain way, and that we can be tempted in this way. But these are some verses and some passages that we can use to stand against Satan. So, how should we stand against Satan? Is to have self-control. And we can get that from 1 Corinthians 10 and 13. It says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond that you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." So also we know that we can withstand Satan by having self-control and knowing that God will give us a way out. So let's go back to Satan tempting Jesus. So now we're going to go back into Matthew 4, but now we're going to look at verses 5 through 9. And that says, "When the devil took him up into the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone.'" So now he's asking Jesus to prove himself again by basically throwing himself off the building and just expecting the angels to save him. So let's look at some ways that Satan can tempt us. You know, if we were put into these situations. So put in situations that could cause us desire to take risks, the feeling of invincibility, the desire to have marital things, material things, to be envious, to covet. So these are things that we are tempted with. I put this in these situations. And I was thinking of some of these, especially the feeling of invincibility. There's been a lot of younger kids died because they're trying to do what's called planking. I don't know if anybody's heard of that. It's when you lay flat across something that's in a dangerous way, like people are going up to really tall buildings and just laying and taking a picture of themselves, like on a railing. A lot of people have died doing that. I don't know why they think that they can just have that ability to do that. But also, something recently I was watching on the news, that kids are riding on hoods of cars now and trying to jump to another car while they're both going down the street. A lot of kids have died recently from that too, and it's called something, I forget the name of it. But, you know, that feeling of invincibility, you know, that feeling that, oh, you know, I can just go do this, or I can do that. You know, that's kind of tempted, you know, people to do that, especially maybe peer pressure or something along those lines. So how can we stand against Satan? And we see that we shouldn't test God in that. That's in Luke 4 and 12. "And Jesus answered and said to him, 'It has been said, you shall not tempt the Lord your God.'" And then also, to be prepared, that's in Matthew 24 and 42, and it says, "Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour the Lord is coming. So, you know, these verses, I think, are great, especially when we're talking about being prepared, you know, because we don't know the hour on which the Lord is coming. So those are the ways that we can stand against Satan. So let's go back real quick and look at the last thing that the devil tempts Jesus with. So here in Matthew 4, 8 through 9, it says, "Again, the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, 'All these things I have given you if you fall down and worship me.'" You know, that's actually a really scary thing to think about. And I also think about this verse in a couple ways, too. You know, this wasn't the devil's thing to give, either. It wasn't his world to give. You know, but it's yet, it's that power. It's that control. And that's the way that Satan can tempt us with power, money, ruling, control, vanity, and the desire to be worshipped. I was trying to look up the term that meant the desire to be worshipped. I know that there's a term that's what it means. You know, when we think of all these things that could pull us in to that wanting power and money and ruling, but we know that bad things happen, you know, if you have that desire to get pulled into. And one of the ones that I think of is recently Mr. Madoff, Bernie Madoff, operator of a Ponzi scheme that considered to be the largest financial fraud in U.S. history. I don't know if you've watched the news or read about Bernie Madoff, but they were saying that his fraud cost people, I guess, $36 billion. It was the largest fraud. He was only charged for $12 billion of it and 105 years in prison. So those are things that he was tempted with. And we can see the situation that he's in right now. That he was tempted with that power and money and ruling and control. And also, I think of other people that have rose to power, to have that power, money, ruling, and control, and also the desire to be worshipped. Of course, we see Saddam's statues here that he had made throughout the cities. And of course, you can see the picture of the people all trying to pull down the statues after they were overthrown, because this was a symbol of power. So those are just the things that, you know, we are tempted with, and we can see that people in the world today have these problems. So how can we stand against these things that we just mentioned? So we can stand against Satan by prayer, and that's in Luke 22 and 40. And that says, "When he came to the place, he said to them, 'Pray that you may not enter into temptation.'" So we know that we can pray not to be entered into temptation. And then we also have, "Don't fall into senseless and harmful practices." And that's in 1 Timothy 6 and 9. And it says, "But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men into destruction and perdition." So, you know, these are things that we could see directly from the Bible that we actually see today, these people falling into these situations. And also, don't do things just to be seen by others. And I just took just this single verse from Matthew 6 and 2. But there are many other verses right here in Matthew 6 that also support this same idea. And it says, "Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet there before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory for men. Assuredly, I say to you that they have their reward." So, you know, I think of people that do charitable deeds just to talk about them, saying, "Hey, I did this," or "I did that." This talks about, you know, we should do, you know, kind and nice things, but not go around saying, "Hey, I've done this, and I've done this, I've done that." And also this goes on to saying about, you know, praying in the streets just to be seen by men. That's all covered there in Matthew 6 and 2. And I think of those things that we want. We want that praise. We want all those things, you know. And we talk about how Satan tempts us. You know, maybe that is something that we're tempted by, to do things just to be praised by others. So how can we avoid the sins that we've discussed here today? Well, one of the biggest ones is to have self-control. So we see that from 1 Corinthians 7 and 5. It says, "Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves into fasting and prayer, and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Now, this is actually talking about two people that are married, and we're talking about sexual desires here, but I still kind of wanted to take a look at this because that last sentence there says, so that Satan does not tempt you because your lack of self-control. You know, I kind of see that as our lack of self-control almost involving anything. Also here in 1 Corinthians 9 and 27, it says, "But I despise my body, I discipline my body and bring it to subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." So we know that here in 1 Corinthians, it's talked about discipline your body and subjection. So we know that we can hold ourselves back with self-control. And also in James 4 and 7, it says, "Therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you." I think that's such a simple verse, but such a strong thing to talk about when we're talking about avoiding sin, that it says, submit to God, resist the devil, and he'll flee from you. You know, just to think that we have that power, you know, to believe in God and to do what he says to do, and the devil will actually flee from us. So, also, along with avoiding sin, we talked about prayer. We talked about prayer a little earlier, but also here in Matthew 26 and 41, it says, "Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." This is something that we have discussed often about how prayer and entering into temptation, about how we can pray against that. Also, to think about the consequences of your actions. So we can see that from Romans 6 and 23. "For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal in Christ Jesus our Lord." So we know that the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Christ. In Galatians 6, 7 through 8. Galatians 6, yeah, verses 7 through 8. It says, "Do not be deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of all the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life." So we know that we should reap of the Spirit so we can reap everlasting life. So, in closing this morning, we've talked about the ways that Jesus was tempted in the wilderness. We talked about those, the three types of temptation that Satan did directly to Jesus. And we also kind of looked at the same sins that we could fall into. So, Jesus was a man and he went through all these temptations and resisted them. He was capable of turning stones into bread and calling angels to save him or even fly himself. The world was his anyway. So, we look at these things, that we know that he was a man. We know that he had these same feelings, you know, along with Gary's lesson, he was talking about the same feelings and the same things that we would go through, the same temptations, but he was able to resist them. So here in Luke 9:17, it says, "So they all ate and were filled, and the 12 baskets of the loaves, fragments, were taken up by them." Just using that verse to prove that he could, you know, turn, basically feed all these people with the bread. You know, so he was able to make these things. He was able to do these things without being tempted. I'm just kind of using these verses to prove who Jesus was. Also in Matthew 25:26, it says, "But the Lord answered and said to him, 'You wicked and lazy servant, you know that I reap where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered seed.'" So with that, we kind of see these areas of Jesus. And also here in closing in Hebrews 4 and 15, it says, For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. So we know that he was tempted in all these same things that we were, but yet he did all this without sin. And in James 1:13, it says, "Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I am tempted by God,' for God cannot be tempted by evil, or does he himself tempt anyone?" So, along with what Gary was saying, he mentioned that God does not cause any bad things to happen to anyone. So therefore, we can see right here that God cannot, I'm not tempted by God. I think of things that people say, why has God done this to me or whatever. We see from these verses that that's not the case. And also ending here in 1 Corinthians 10:13, it says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." So that's kind of the last verse that I wanted to use in closing today, thinking about how Jesus was tempted by Satan in the desert, and think of the ways that we are tempted, but also to keep in mind that God has given us a way of escape with all the sin and all the things that we are tempted with today. So I'd like to keep those things in mind as we stand and sing.